Jane Alexander describes herself as an adventurer ever since the age of three, climbing trees, examining bugs, and searching for frogs in the muddy river shallows while she was growing up in Brookline, Massachusetts. Her professional career has included appearing in 60 films and television shows while chairing the National Endowment for the Arts and working with conservationists at the Wildlife Conservation Society, the New York State Parks Recreation and Historic Preservation, and the Audubon Society, all of which she discusses in a new book called Wild Things, Wild Places, Adventurous Tales of Wildlife and Conservation on Planet Earth. It's published by Knopf, and I'm very pleased it has brought Jane Alexander back to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Your love of nature seems to, at least in part, have come from your parents and your mother in particular. Is it significant that she was from Nova Scotia?
I think so, because you live really close to the ground in Nova Scotia.
I've been to Brookline. It's a suburb of Boston. It's not a nature preserve.
No. There are a couple of great estates. I didn't grow up on those. I was in a very suburban part. But there, you know, wherever you live, Lenny, I really believe you can find all kinds of creatures if you look.
But you go back to Nova Scotia.
Yes, we live there now. I'm a resident.
And you write that some of the effects of climate change are already evident there. What are some of the things that you've noticed?
Well, one is the rising tides. Nova Scotia is close to the Labrador Current, and the Labrador Current is fed by the Greenland Melt. So I've been kind of documenting that with little steel rods, and at least a couple of inches already.
So the beach is losing inches?
Yeah, the beach is.
You write that, I'm quoting, "My life has been immersed in the world of make-believe ever since I began acting. It's a magical world I love and that summons the most imaginative parts of me. But the natural world holds more mystery and beauty than can ever be contained in one life or vista or creature." How would you describe the intersection of your acting career and your work in conservation?
Well, I like to say that the Creator created the most imaginative place possibly to think of, the universe and our planet Earth, and that the human mind is also has the imaginative element that perhaps animals don't have, other animals.
Are other people in your business, do any of them share a passion for both of these worlds? Or your husband, Ed Sheeran, who I associate with very city kinds of things like Law and Order and Hill Street Blues.
Yes. Well, Ed was patient with me and would travel with me, and he was actually a very good spotter of birds. Birding is my passion. But I would certainly say yes. Robert Redford is a wonderful, staunch conservator and conservationist, and also a nature lover.
And now Leonardo DiCaprio has made a film about the changes in the environment.
Yes. There's many in my business who are involved.
Your conservation work spans more than three decades. What are some of the changes that you've seen from the time you first became active, other than the rising tides?
Well, the decline of species, certainly. As a birder, if you've been birding as long as I have, four decades, you see that a flock of birds that might include, say, you know, 10 yellow warblers now includes only one. We're seeing just single species more and more, I mean single individuals of a species more and more. And the most recent report that came out is really alarming about vertebrates, animals, and that is that we have lost since 1970 two-thirds. In 3 years it will be two-thirds of the numbers of animals, vertebrate animals, that have been cataloged.
Some of them just because of the way humans have taken over the world, but in some cases because we kill them off. We recently had a conversation with some people about what's going on with elephants in Africa, and they are just horrified by seeing herds with only one bull elephant because the other males have been killed for their tusks.
That's right. Elephants are really having a terrible time because of ivory, and also tigers, body parts. But it's not just those animals. We're talking also about frogs that have a fungus that is probably related to the trading and of frogs across the world, and reptiles in general are being collected out of to extinction.
And this leads me to Theodore Roosevelt, who is our first conservation president, but also a man who did a lot of hunting of endangered species.
Yes, he did. Back then, they were more plentiful, and back then there was an awful lot of trophy hunting going on, which began the decimation, by the way, of tigers, elephants, and certainly bison.
And the widespread killing of buffalo was at least in part a wake-up call for Americans when their population was reduced from 40 million to 1,000 in 1884.
Yes, yes. And my grandfather was Buffalo Bill Cody's doctor. Buffalo Bill shot 1,000 all on his own during those years. And then later my grandfather said that he regretted greatly the fact that he had killed so many because they were very close to extinction. I might add that the Bronx Zoo right here in New York brought a dozen of the few that were left to Pelham Parkway area, what's Pelham Parkway today, and let them breed and then repopulated the West with those very bison.
Did Teddy Roosevelt's administration accomplish more for conservation beyond what we've just said than any that's followed, or have there been some that have been particularly exemplary?
Well, Obama surpassed Teddy Roosevelt now in acquisition of lands and places in the ocean to be made monuments and preserves.
And then there's an outcry, I'm sorry for interrupting mm-hmm. you, but there's an outcry every time some land is set aside for preservation.
Well, but, you know, we only have 15% of the earth that is wild, you can consider wild, left. I think animals deserve at least half of that, frankly. They're not going to get half in our lifetime, but we have to find a way to coexist with them.
What were your thoughts on the acquittal of the Bundy brothers and their followers of federal conspiracy and weapons charges that stem from their takeover of federally owned wildlife sanctuary in Oregon?
Well, I don't really have a lot to say about that. I mean, it is a sanctuary, and it was mainly put aside for birds. Of course, it is owned by the American people, but I'm not going to comment too much on that.
Are you concerned that the United States will drop out of the climate change agreements that it has signed in recent years?
I'm concerned, but China doesn't want the United States to do that. They really are going to urge new President-elect Trump to stick to the climate change because it would be disastrous for the world if he withdrew.
They did. There was a piece in Today's Times that where the Chinese leader said, "We didn't invent climate change, no matter what Donald Trump says."
That's right.
My guest is Jane Alexander, whose latest book deals with the wide range of her interests. It's called Wild Things, Wild Places, Adventurous Tales of Wildlife and Conservation on Planet Earth. How do you define conservation?
Well, I look at it as three things. One is an attitude, another is spirituality, and the third are regulations. And let me define those for you. Attitude is really when we come out of our homes or something and we confront an animal, that be it a small insect or a larger one. The attitude really, in my mind, should be give the little guy a chance. You know, look at them. They have two eyes like we do. They do the same things we do. They need to eat and shelter. So that's attitude, first of all. Don't squash a bug right away. Just give it time. Remove it. Place it somewhere else.
You want us to all become Janes?
I don't know. Yes, maybe. And the second one, spirituality, really has to do with the complex web of life and the interconnectedness of everything.
Go ahead.
And the third one, of course, is regulations. You need us. We need to regulate ourselves on this planet with regard to the safeguarding of natural resources.
You're right about going on a trip to Belize in the early 1980s. And you got interested in jaguars?
Yes. Well, Belize has the wonderful Jaguar Preserve, which was begun by a young field biologist I met back in the early 1980s, Alan Rabinowitz, who has since become the great cat expert of the world and co-founded Panthera. And Alan was 30 at that time, and I watched him, his trajectory as a young research scientist, become a conservationist, which is true, by the way, of all field biologists today. You cannot, it's no longer possible just to want to understand or even love an animal. You have to want to protect it, too.
Had you seen any jaguars in the wild when you went to Belize?
No, I didn't see any jaguars in Belize. I heard one night, and that was absolutely thrilling. It was 30 years later when Alan Rabinowitz and I, who we became closest friends, went to the Pantanal in Brazil a few years ago. 30 years later that we saw jaguars in abundance in the Pantanal.
You write that the jaguar of Central and South America is a single species in its entire range, unlike the tiger of Asia, which has many subspecies. Weren't jaguars also in our area, in the United States, until they were exterminated? Why were they killed? Because there was fear that they would kill cattle and sheep?
Well, they were killed pretty early on, the majority of them, and I don't know how far they advanced into the United States. But they were probably killed for the same reason they're still killed today, because they're absolutely beautiful. They're killed for their skins. And now, unfortunately, some Asian peoples have come over here because they don't have a lot of tiger left, and they're seeking out jaguars to kill for the body parts, which is very, very discouraging.
You were the chairperson of the National Endowment for the Arts from 1993 to 1997, and it was a time when the agency was under serious threat from conservative politicians, led by Newt Gingrich, who is, may very well wind up working in this new administration. Why were conservatives so upset about the NEA in the 1990s?
Well, those were the height of the culture wars then. And when Gingrich and the first Congress that had Republicans in 40 years came in and took over power in 1995, they had a contract with America, and the National Endowment for the Arts was on top of the hit list. Let's get rid of that. We should have no business funding the arts. And fortunately, we won that culture war.
Although you write about feeling like you were being pressed from both sides. Artists wanted you to do more for them, and at the same time, the politicians wanted to pretty much eliminate any government support of the arts.
I think that comes with the territory, don't you? I mean, artists are wonderful, but they also make a lot of demands, as they should.
Are you worried about the NEA coming under any new threat?
I'm not, actually. I think there's an awful lot of other areas that are going to be under attack, if you will. I don't think the endowment will be at this point in time.
A listener, Scott from Yonkers, wants to know your take on zoos. Are they beneficial or harmful to endangered species?
I think that overall they're beneficial. There are good zoos and there are bad zoos, and we're really talking about the quality of life for the animals. There are some wonderful zoos in this country, and they are educational arms where children and people who have never experienced animals in the wild, as I've been privileged to do, can go and see them and learn about them and want to protect them. And they are also conservation arms. The Bronx Zoo was originally part of the New York Zoological Society, a very old organization. And the prescient director, Bill Conway, at the time in the early 90s, said, 1990s, said, we need to change our mission to one of conservation, not just collection. So zoos are really important in the conservation world today.
But it seems to me we're hearing a lot more about privately owned animal preserves, people who just concerned spend their own money to save coyotes or to save some of the bigger cats. Should that be the role of private citizens?
I don't know if it should be the role of private citizens, but if the animals are orphaned and they're kept well, there are some wonderful ones out in California, private preserves, then I'm all for that. What I'm not for is the farming of animals for trophy hunting, and we have plenty of them here right in the United States of America. We have more tigers farmed in the United States of America for trophy hunting than we do in the wild.
They're farmed and then they're let loose and then hunters can shoot them?
Yeah. And it's really not It's not even a sporting chance, I don't think. They're on this preserve, and the hunter knows he's going to get them. So,
well, the same is true with the birds that you love spotting. They're released, as they are sometimes for hunters, it's almost guaranteed that most of them are going to be killed.
Well, yes, but what we need to do now, Lenny, is really manage the planet. And the birds that are doing best, the order of birds that are doing best are the ducks. And one of the reasons they're doing so well is because of an organization called Ducks Unlimited, which is run by hunters. But those hunters have made such a very well-management plan for wetlands across the United States and Canada that ducks are thriving. They only take a certain number, and they're very responsible hunters.
Jane Alexander will be speaking with Sam Waterson tonight at 8 o'clock at the 92nd Street Y. For tickets, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. On December 1st, she will be at the Barnes & Noble store on Broadway and 82nd Street at 7 o'clock, speaking with Vicki Wilson. Her book is Wild Things, Wild Places, Adventurous Tales of Wildlife and Conservation on Planet Earth. It's published by Knopf.